Right, good morning or good afternoon or good evening or wherever you happen to be in the world. That's right. Welcome to Extra Sequential. This is the first episode of a new podcast coming from Perth.
The day but, if you will.
From the what?
The day but.
I don't know what that is.
Debut.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought that was a French swear word. So, yes, we're coming from Perth in Western Australia, the most isolated city in the world.
I've heard that. Is that true?
It is. And it also has the highest amount of mineral deposits.
That's less interesting.
Is it? We should tell people who we are. My name is Chris Bather. It's Chris with a K. It's funny, you know, the both things about me and my cohort, both of our names need to be spelt.
Yeah, my name is Mladen Lukatin. Yeah, or Mladen, or Mladen, or however people try and pronounce it.
Aladdin, as some people often say.
Oh.
I'm sure that drives you mad.
Yeah.
So basically, we're just two average geeks with higher than average intelligence and very different tastes. We just thought we'd start a podcast just as an excuse to get together and tell people what we love about sequential art.
There is a lot to say, I think.
There is, comic books. So Extra Sequential, what is Extra Sequential? Well, I started a online magazine. You can actually check them out at extrasequential.com last year. And I've been doing this comic book internet journalism, I suppose, and I use that in inverted commas for a while now. Been to San Diego Comic-Con a couple of times. I write for a website called Broken Frontier. So this is basically just another excuse for me to amble on about comics in yet another medium.
And I basically criticise Chris's comments and his magazines as often as I can.
And not just about comics.
No, it's just hair, everything.
Yeah.
I think I contributed maybe one article back 2 years ago and have not bothered since.
That is true. It was a review of something.
Yes, I wrote a review of Mad Love, I believe. There was a DMZ trade
yes.
I reviewed.
And The Girl That Flies or something?
The Girl Who Leapt Through Time.
That's the one.
My taste may be more on the less mainstream side.
I would agree with that.
I definitely have a taste for manga and that sort of thing.
Yes.
I won't say no to a superhero comic, but it's not what I prefer to read, so I find we butt heads.
We do. Yes, and yes, that's basically what we've talked about. So we've got a few things to cover today.
Yes, shall we get cracking?
Let's do it. Now we're on to the news. One thing we try and focus on here at Extra Sequential is, we're just a weekly podcast. We can not possibly compete with the World Wide Web and its wonders of daily delivery and news systems.
We could compete, but I think we'd come towards the back or the... We might not qualify in the finals of the news.
That's true.
the Channel 31 of the comic book news. That's a Perth joke.
That is a Perth joke, of which there are several. So we'll save the rest for another day.
Don't want to use up all our A material.
No, that's right. So we just thought that rather than go through all the development of Comic-Con and latest Hollywood shenanigans, we'll just go through latest news of what piques our interests.
I think so.
Now, the first thing, Mladen, is something near and dear to your heart.
Ah, yes. Okay, yep. Will Eisner's A Contract with God, if you haven't read it, like Chris.
Sorry.
I think there's a big hole in your comic book.
That's one of many.
Knowledge. Yeah, Chris has many holes.
Yeah, I'm the Swiss cheese of geeks.
Yeah, it's good. I like that. You should put that on your business card. Chris has several business cards if you didn't know.
I do.
It's possible you listening might have one of Chris's business cards because I think he's given one to everyone.
Thanks, Mum.
Hey. But yeah, Will Eisner's A Contract with God, written, would have been in the 50s, 60s? Sound about right?
Is it that late? I thought it was more like 70-something, but okay. Was it the first graphic novel ever made, wasn't it?
They say that.
Technically, yeah, maybe not.
Technical, probably graphic... he invented the term graphic novel.
He did?
Yes. But they're adapting a film of his work, which might be met with mixed feelings, I would say.
Why do you say that?
Well, okay...
It's such a revered work of art.
It's a revered work of art. Alan Moore's work has not had the best track record as being adapted.
Yeah, that's true.
But, well, if you've read The Spirit, for example,
yes.
Will Eisner's Spirit, you would know that the film version is very faithful and very well scripted, and the performances are excellent.
That is sarcasm, by the way.
You can tell. No? It doesn't matter. But what they're doing with A Contract with God is it's not going to Frank Miller or let's say, Brett Ratner, or...
Yes.
Who's another excellent director?
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay might do an interesting contract with God.
Yeah. Be shotguns involved.
Yeah, say your prayers. Could work. Well, Smith would be in it somewhere.
Yes.
But it's being adapted by, here we go, a quartet of acclaimed independent directors, which was interesting because I read that. I'm like, oh, okay, it'll be some guys I've heard of. But no, they're actually independent directors. Alex Rivera, who made Sleep Dealer, Serge Chun, is that how you pronounce
it? Sure, why not?
Yeah, Children of Invention, Barry Jenkins, and Sean Baker, and none of who I've heard of.
Neither have I, and that must mean they are really acclaimed and independent.
Well, they're independent. They meet the second qualification.
Yes.
I find that kind of interesting, that they're picking not unknown, because they're all award-winning. I looked them up, and they're all quite...
Okay.
But the choice to adapt... You haven't read A Contract with God, have you?
I haven't, but I know... I can see why they chose four people, because that's the kind of structure.
Yeah, there's basically four independent stories. Mm-hmm. They don't really weave together. They share a thematic link.
Oh, okay.
So whether they adapt them interweaving in the film, like cutting between the scenes, or if it'll be four short films in order, that's how I'm envisioning they might do it. I think it could be interesting because... well, it could be a god-awful mess, I think, is the other question. And I think that's what everyone's worried about. But I think it's the right direction to pick some unknowns because of it is kind of serious thematic stuff. They're very personal stories. It doesn't call for... really sharp contrast or comic book cutting effects like Ang Lee's Hulk, you know? Well, when you read it, I think you'll get a better feeling of it.
So the actual book is set in one apartment building in New York over a period of time, is that right?
I seem to remember, it's set in one tenement building. But yeah, the stories, maybe they appear in the background of each other's stories. I'd have to check again. But the link is they're all kind of lonely or they have issues with their family. It's been very personal stories.
Yep.
And then there's one where I think he's a Jewish pastor or something like that, and he has a tragedy happen in his family, and then he curses God and stuff happens.
Okay.
And then he gets these incredible powers that allow him to scale walls
shoot
web from his hands.
I like it.
I'll lend it to you, Chris. You'll love it. All right. Okay. Moving on.
Okay, well, look forward to... We don't know when that one's coming out.
It's still in development. The script's being written by Danny something.
Darren Dean.
Darren Dean. Well prepared for this.
And it's come out in 2011. There you go.
2011. Okay, that's cool. Really quick.
Awesome. All right. Next, as I mentioned in the intro, I have been writing for almost 2 years now, a website called Broken Frontier. And
never heard of it.
No. Well, it's not one of the main ones, I guess you could say, but they launched a digital mag, so they've released quite a few issues now, and it's now on your iPad, so all those lucky people have your iPad. If you go on brokenfrontier.com, you'll find all the issues, but basically it's a free digital magazine, all our comics, not just superhero stuff, but independent stuff as well, and it's released every 2 weeks. Okay, something near and dear to my heart, something we'll talk about later, is Superman. Now, Superman the movie was like a pivotal moment in my life.
I just thought I'd say he's literally near and dear to Chris's heart. He's wearing him on his shirt.
I am. I do have a Superman shirt, as you have a Batman shirt.
I know, right?
Awesome. We should hit the town later.
Studs.
So, the writer of Superman the movie and follow-up Superman 2, Tom Mankiewicz, died last weekend. He was 68. Now, he wrote three James Bond films in the 70s and 80s,
which
I believe.
Which ones?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I think The Man with the Golden Gun was one of them.
That's the worst one.
Well, I think he kind of helped steer it post-Connery,
that scene where James Bond rips the J off his shirt and throws it.
Yes.
Scaramanga or whatever the bad guy's name is.
I figured it was so bad, but yes, close. Tom Mankiewicz was one of the guys that helped kind of steer the initial draft of Richard Donner's, the director's first two Superman films, because they were basically shot at the same time, steer it away from the camp and stuff, which it originally had. Mario Puzo, who wrote Godfather.
Yes.
He took a first stab at it, and apparently, according to Donner, Mankiewicz had more to do with the screenplay than Puzo. So
that's interesting.
And so not much is heard from Mankiewicz after the first Superman 1 or 2 films. He did direct TV and a couple of movies later in his life, but any good Superman fan will know Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, is the ultimate edition, and that came out when Superman Returns, I'm rolling my eyes now because that was a bad film. Anyway, so Superman 2, the Richard Donner cut, is the version that you should watch and is closest to Mankiewicz and Donner's version because, yeah, Superman 2 wasn't the best.
Is that the one where they had a lot of unfinished footage? So there's a few scenes which don't look as polished?
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Yep.
So the Richard Donner cut isn't perfect because, yeah, they have, like, you know, casting sessions and, you know, camera tests and all this kind of stuff because Donner left halfway through. But
ouch.
Last bit of the news is there is a new Spider-Man cartoon coming out on the Disney XD channel next year. It's written and produced by Brian Michael Bendis, who pretty much is the architect of Marvel's universe and all the Dark Avengers and New Avengers and all that. Oh, there's so many different Avengers. Anyway, he also created the Ultimate Spider-Man line of comics and wrote every issue, 145 of them.
Name rang a bell.
Yeah, he... Well, when Spider-Man first came out, the movie in 2002, Marvel wanted to capitalize on Spider-Man's kind of global success. And they realized, as you probably did, and a lot of jaded superhero fans, that superhero comics are quite convoluted and hard to get into. So they saying it so. So Marvel launched the Ultimate line, which is a more streamlined version for people new to the franchise to get into.
Has that now gotten as complicated as
Kind of, and it's gone through a few reboots and stuff. So the Ultimate...
Shouldn't that defeat the purpose of them launching
it? I think it did its job.
It's the idea to boil them down to their essence and sort of strip off all the crap, basically.
Kind of, and get away with a bit more of the massive crossovers, superhero melodramatics, but eventually got to that
point.
Get
rid of them, you mean? Well, add more crossovers?
No, get rid of them in some sense, or at least minimise them, so there's not a wealth of titles.
Punisher meets Archie. Is that in canon, by the way?
It probably isn't Archie, because it's probably the best thing that has happened to Archie for a while. No, he did get married, I think, didn't he, Archie?
No!
Yes. We can talk about that next week.
We're going to have a whole episode dedicated to Archie.
Don't ask me who to, but
the
anyway.
Wedding special. It's almost as big as, you know, Charles and Diana.
Yes, there's commemorative plates.
J-Lo and Ben Affleck. It's a really, you know, big deal.
Brangelina.
I've not heard of them.
Also involved in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, and these names will pop up later in show, is the creators of Ben 10. So that's Joe Kelly, Stephen T. Siegel, Duncan Rollo, and Joe Casey.
Which you may have seen for those thousands of commercials of Ben 10's Goo Factory and all those sick toys you can buy.
Am I the only
one who watches, like, morning TV before work?
I used to in the 80s when Thundercats and He-Man was on, but now, not so much.
Oh, old man Chris. Why don't you position your glasses a bit higher there?
Also involved in the cartoon is Jeff Loeb from Lost, who we'll also be talking about.
Writer of Teen Wolf, I believe.
And Commando.
And Commando, yes.
And Smallville.
Is it Loeb or Loeb?
I think it's Loeb as in
Ear. I wasn't Loeb, sure.
But I could be wrong.
But it's not spelt like Ear Loeb.
No, it's not. It's L-O-E-B.
I'm sure Jeff spells it like...
Jeff is J-P-H as well.
I know, right? What's
P-H like a chemist. And he's written a bunch of comics. He'll be a producer. So that's big. Also involved is Paul Dini, who I know you love. Maybe not personally, but...
He's an alright-looking guy.
Is he?
He's kind of dark.
Yeah,
kind of
dark.
A bit big, maybe.
Tall, dark, and
well,
handsome.
He was when he was doing the old cartoon, wasn't he?
Yes.
Which I love, by the way.
What is that old cartoon?
The Batman the Animated Series.
Yes.
Which, I believe the introduction, you know, the little 30-second, you know, this is Batman, it doesn't show the name of the show.
No.
So people just, I guess, called it Batman, the Animated Series, which is pretty clumsy when you...
Yeah, because I don't think the Superman one was referred to as that, was it?
Superman had his one had a name and, like, a not as good an introductory sequence, I believe.
No,
but Paul Dini's scripts on that show were pretty amazing. He went into a surprising amount of detail to make everyone... makes sense, basically. I think he's the one who basically took Mr. Freeze from a weird, wacky dude with like a bright... Did he have like a bright yellow suit with purple...
Yes, something like that.
Yeah, and I'm gonna freeze you. Which, you
know... You're sending me to the cooler.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I'm not familiar with that voice that you're doing there. Block that memory out. But no, he added all these depth.
Yes.
So the characters which weren't there.
That would be the episode called Heart of Ice, which I think may have been nominated or won an Emmy.
You might be right.
I say that because I just finished watching season one.
Those DVDs are worth getting, by the way.
And frustratingly, only season one is on Region 4. So,
is that so?
Yeah, they haven't released the others in Australia.
I've got them imported, so you might be right. I think Region 1, that's the only one I've seen.
Odd, but true.
Here you can only pick up random episodes, you know, like... They sell these kind of best of. There'll be like four episodes on a disc.
Oh, okay.
You know? So maybe, I mean, really, you got to appeal to the collectors. And what do they want? We want every single episode. Let us judge which are the good ones, thank you.
That's true.
I don't need Batman versus the samurai space guy or something. They weren't all good episodes.
No, they weren't. That's true. No.
But if you remember the show and you're wondering if it's as good as you remember, it's better. It's seriously better than you remember.
A lot of comic creators, I know Mark Waid, who's done a lot of writing for DC, he loves it. And a lot of people really look up to that. It was the first non-comic to really show people shooting on Saturday morning, I think. People getting shot.
They weren't allowed to show people shooting directly at the camera.
I know that.
That's one of those children's television rules.
Yes.
But I know they got a way of doing that in a few episodes.
Cool.
Nobody caught it.
Awesome. And it was quite dark, very gothic, and quite surprising. I mean, you look at Batman Brave and the Bold. I don't know if you've seen any episodes of that.
I have seen it. I think it's on right now.
And I love it. I love it. It's funny. Aquaman's hilarious. It's got all these extra new DC characters.
There's a game coming out of that.
That is true.
Yeah.
And I think it shows the versatility of Batman as a character, that he can work in both those worlds. Anyway, so yeah, Jeff Loeb and Paul Dini, who we said is involved with Batman, he also involved in Lost and the Arkham Asylum game, which came out last year.
Have you read?
And it's awesome.
I assume you've been reading his run on Detective. Has he finished?
I think he might be still going, actually.
That's good.
Because
I read a whole bunch of issues from the start of his run, and then I kind of dropped it a bit. But it was up to his standard. I just don't like the art.
It's always a catch-22, I guess. Yeah. You can't please both of them.
I like, there was a couple with, was it J.H. Williams III or something like
that? Yes, he should be working on a new Batwoman series. He launched about the new lesbian Batwoman.
Oh, God, she's been like the new lesbian Batwoman for like 6 years, and they have not done anything with
it. I know. That
was hitting all the papers, and nothing came of it.
No, that is one of the things that DC fans find frustrating.
But I'm sure there are a lot of entertaining headlines, which is basically why they did it.
Yes.
Zip, pow, what's this? Oh,
God. They don't do that as much as they used to.
That's good.
Paul Dini wrote the Arkham Asylum game, and also just been announced this very week that the sequel to the Arkham Asylum game, called Arkham City, should be coming out sometime soon. So look for that, Arkham City and the Ultimate Spider-Man, hopefully sometime next year.
Cool.
That is the news.
What we've been reading segment, an entirely original segment which no other podcasts do.
What's it about?
Well, basically, we go through what we've been reading and
I like
talk
it.
About it. Talking about stuff on a podcast.
Kick us off, Madden.
All right. I've been reading, since it's our third podcast, podcast, I should say, not a third. I'll include stuff I read a couple of weeks ago as well.
Okay.
I'll start with 20th Century Boys, Naoki Urasawa's. Well, it's pretty epic. You might have seen posters for this around town.
Oh, I've seen the film posters.
Yes, there's about, I think there's like 3 or 4 films now.
Okay.
It is a long-running manga, and there's a lot of story in it. What I'm impressed with is, one, he's one of few manga artists who effectively draws lots of different faces. You could strip these characters down to wearing nothing, and you'd have no problem telling them apart and remembering who they are and what function they play in the story.
It sounds like George Perez. Probably doesn't mean much to you, but yes.
Who's George Perez?
He does a lot of crowd superhero scenes like Avengers and Justice League. And yeah, he does different hairstyles and faces for every character.
Well, that's it, yeah. I mean, the faces all differ. He has this whole palette of noses, and it's not your typical anime. I mean, they do look anime-ish.
A nose palette, I like it.
Yeah, basically, that's true. I enjoy that because it reads like a Western comic in that sense, you know. I read a lot of manga anyway. I would say this is one of the best ones, especially in terms of story. Basically, for the uninitiated, a group of boys, now they're grown up men, they're in their young 30s, they used to play as kids, basically.
Okay.
Back in, would have been the 70s, because they were listening to 70s music. 20th Century Boys by T-Rex, I believe.
Okay.
Yep, that's what the titles are referenced to, if you're thinking it sounds familiar. Mark Bolan, excellent. Basically, they start to notice all this stuff that's happening around them is matching the fantasy they had as kids. So they dreamed about themselves saving the world from these terrorists who are committing these particular crimes, like a gassing of, you know, Paris or this sort of stuff. And then some of their friends start to die. And so the ones who realize what's going on are trying to track down all their friends from when they were kids to work out who's doing this? What's happening? Meanwhile, there's this cult that's growing about the friend. And, you know, it's pretty cool. And around book five, things change and you're like, oh, this is not going in the direction I thought it would. So it's pretty awesome. Basically, cool. the evil cult wins and they become rulers of the world.
Wow.
And the main character dies.
So it's very depressing.
It's pretty awesome. I'd recommend picking it up.
Okay, sounds quite epic.
Mm. Oh, moving on. A newer volume of Vagabond has come out. Vagabond,
yes, I've heard you mention this before.
Mm. By Takehiko Inoue.
You sound these names very well. You could work on SBS.
I'm sure Japanese listeners...
It's another Perth or Australian joke. SBS is like our international
What does
channel.
SBS stand for?
Special Broadcasting Service?
No, it doesn't. No, it does, but... they used to play a lot more pornographic European films on SBS.
They've cut that down.
Yeah. And we had little jokes about what SBS really stood for. I won't say them here because it's pretty filthy. Meanwhile, Vagabond is basically an adaptation of, I think, the 18th century Japanese novel Musashi, which I've also read, which is pretty awesome, about basically this young guy wants to be the greatest sword fighter ever, and he does. And he fights a lot of people along the way, but it's quite realistic. And he has a friend who's estranged, and there's various characters he meets. I won't really recount the plot, but the art's pretty amazing. There's so much detail on the landscapes and backgrounds.
Is it very bloody and violent?
Yes.
Okay.
In the last couple of volumes, he killed an entire school of swordsmen, like 88 of them. He didn't really want to. They were, you know, they were attacking him, and he was just...
Sounds like Uma Thurman and Kill Bill.
Kind of, yeah. That's what that was borrowing from. That's
Okay.
Yeah. Mm, there was a school, the Yoshiaka school, I think.
You've done your research, I'm impressed.
I just remember it from the book. I've not done my research. In the last couple of volumes of Vagabond, he's basically sustained this really bad injury to his leg. And the last couple of volumes is he's been working out what the hell he's going to do now, because he can't fight.
Okay.
And people are trying to attack him now, because he's like, oh, it's that guy who killed all those dudes. And he's still kicking their asses. He just can't run around very well.
Okay.
So I think he's just a prima donna. He'll come through, and he still has to fight the main baddie in this. So it's pretty awesome.
Sounds good.
Moving on quickly. Freaking Prince Valiant. Okay. This has been long, long on my must-read list.
Yes.
My granddad loves it, and he's always told me, it's amazing, I need to read it. I was like, sure thing, Grandpa. Fuck off. Didn't say that to my granddad. I love my granddad. Basically, it's so much better than you'd think it would be. It's aged really well.
So this Prince Valiant is from Hal Foster.
Hal Foster, yes.
And it's a newspaper strip back in the 30s and 40s.
Yep, 30s and 40s. He was writing it up until the 70s, and then other artists took over. Gianni De Luca, I think.
Okay.
Who aren't as well acclaimed.
Yeah.
And people, you typically agreed it was not as good when other artists took over. But the amount of detail he packs onto the page, and not just physical drawing detail, because... everyone's perfectly rendered. You'll never really see a character, which makes you go, oh, that's a bit weird.
Yes.
Except maybe young men's faces. When he tries to draw them pretty, they're a bit kind of Hollywood.
Metrosexuals didn't exist in the
Middle
Ages. A little
bit metrosexual. They're a little bit Clark Gable in the face, like Prince Valiant especially. But when they're fighting and, you know, large battle scenes are incredibly epic. But what I love is the amount of detail he puts on the page in terms of story. So much happens on every page. We'll get into more of that later when we talk about Wednesday Comics and Pood.
Yes.
Is it Pood?
It is.
I love it. Which don't pack as much on the page, but we'll get into that. You can basically read one page and so much happens in it. The story moves along at this really brisk pace. So if you were reading this weekly, you wouldn't feel like this, oh, they're wasting my time. You know, it's not just one day spread over, you know, 70 weeks. You get my meaning.
And it's all in colour. It's big format.
Yes. Is it Fantagraphics? Yeah.
Okay.
I believe it's Fantagraphics. They've recently published the whole collection, and now they're publishing them again, but from proper work prints from when they were published in a much larger format.
Yes.
What would you say this is?
About twice the size of a normal comic?
Yeah, two normal comics, if you imagine them stacked up against each other, that size. So it's in close to the original size. I don't think it's anywhere near as big.
And the production quality is pretty impressive. I mean, for a that's comic right. that's older than the both of us, I think it's and our parents, it's it is pretty. I mean, yeah, the colours are crisp. It's interesting. There's no. I haven't read any Prince Valiant, but I'm aware of how Foster's work. But just looking at it now, it's all captions. There's no thought balloons or dialogue. That's
it. The dialogue happens in the captions usually.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no thought balloons. It's kind of like. It is almost like watching, what are they called, storyboards.
Yes, okay.
But beautifully rendered storyboards. It's just the older style of telling a comic story.
And it's set in the, is this the medieval
It's set in the age of King Arthur.
Okay.
He takes a few liberties with history here and there. But it's the period costumes and the actual day-to-day life stuff's pretty accurate. He just sort of condenses historical events. So Prince Valiant is taking part in major battles against the Huns and all that good stuff.
Awesome.
Check it out. Seriously.
I will. It does look good, I must say.
Yeah. And, okay, last one. Be super quick with this one. Bouncer. Had this recommended by our local comic shop, or
yes.
LCS. it's by Alexandro Jodorowsky. Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, very good.
And François Bouche. I'm probably
I'm slightly that. Turned on now, Melanin.
Thank you. It's basically a Western. Very kind of 70s heavy metal art. It's all right. I'd say it's... honestly, it's just okay. The art's all right, but I think the story's actually more interesting, and it's going to develop more. It's really the beginning of the story, so
okay.
I don't have much to say about it. But if you'd like your heavy... It's by Humanoids, who are republishing a lot of...
Yes, and Humanoids have just started going... They're a European publisher, aren't they?
That
and they've just started going into the Previews catalogue. Previews is what
were they
goes to...
Before?
I don't believe they were. They've just started publishing through Diamond Distributors, who are pretty much have a monopoly on distributing comics in the English language speaking world. And I've seen some of their stuff in the catalogue, and it looks pretty good.
Worth checking out.
Okay, what I've been reading very quickly, I'm a floppy reader. Now, what that means, a floppy is a loose term for what we call monthly issues. So, Mladen tends to stick to...
I'm definitely a trade guy.
But I enjoy my weekly trip to the comic shop and spend far too much money than I should.
He enjoys his weekly floppy.
I do. So, I haven't been reading a lot, but this is just what I've been reading well this very morning, actually. Brightest Day is DC's epic of the... Yeah, Blackest, it's a spin-off of, well, a sequel of sorts from Blackest Night, which is a Green Lantern epic, which happened last year. A bunch of people, dead superheroes, of which there are a lot in the DC universe, started to come from back from the dead. And now,
you know who else titles their books like that? The Twilight novels. Eclipse,
yeah.
Twilight.
Did
That's
you just
what
compare
DC has in common
Green
with?
Lantern to Twilight? I think I
epic
might have
crossover,
to
crossover, my friend.
Might have to strangle you. So Brightest Day is a, I think it's a 12-part series, and so I've just read number 7. And Firestorm, and Deadman, and Hawkman—all these characters we haven't Aquaman seen, Martian Manhunter—all these characters we haven't seen in a while because they've been dead or absent from the pages of DC books. Now coming back, so I'm happy. So Brightest Day, talking about people coming back from the dead, Batman. Look at that cover, Mladen. Batman, The Return of Bruce Wayne,
okay,
number 4 or 6.
Should I describe it to people?
Please.
Batman is in the most ridiculous kind of cape with flowy bits. He's riding a horse that looks really panicky, but that's understandable because the floor is exploding or something. Oh, no, people are shooting at the floor, and he's running from cowboys. He's got a cowboy hat on and a mask. He looks like Zorro, actually. Looks heaps like Zorro.
Zorro was the inspiration for
that. Of course, but I think that was intentional. They made
yes.
him look a bit like Zorro.
Basically, what's happened is...
Horse has a bat emblem. That's so cute.
It is. Yeah, I'm sure Bruce Wayne would love you calling his stallion cute. This is a 6-part series written by Grant Morrison. Each issue is done by a different artist and tells a different period of time in which Bruce Wayne, who died last year, is coming back to life through the time warp zone.
I've not been reading this. What's he been...
He's basically leaving clues for himself and his ancestors
I mean, like,
and
what
stuff
sort
in the
of,
past.
What sort of historical eras has he been into? Because the premise sounds pretty fun. Like you
it
know,
does sound fun.
Batman it's, through time.
They probably haven't made as much of it as they have, but as they could have. But it's not a bad series. I mean, the first issue was like a caveman. He was fighting like a tribe, the Bat People.
Does he meet major historical figures and
no.
help them realize things?
He didn't save Abraham Lincoln or anything. It's not.
He doesn't go, hey, you should be mayor. Mayor! I like this town.
What's that TV show?
That's from Back to the Future.
No, what's that? Quantum Leap.
Ah.
It's not like that. It's a good series. It'll be good to have Batman come back into life. And as I mentioned on my blog recently, comicbookjesus.com, Batman appears in 23 separate issues in October, because that's when he's coming back. So that's
how many issues does DC put out a month? around like 40, 50?
Yeah, 40, 50, 60, I guess.
And he's like in two-thirds of them, basically.
Yes, pretty much. He's a big character.
Tension war.
And I don't read a lot of Marvel titles, and I haven't read this one, but a while ago, Rick Remender, who's a writer, wanted to kill Frank Castle, the Punisher, because he's like the pretty much the only street-level character in the Marvel universe. I suppose Daredevil and perhaps Luke Cage and a few others could, but he said, Marvel, I want to make the Punisher as wild and crazy as the rest of the superheroes running around the rooftops. So they said, sure. So he killed Frank Castle, and then he got put back together as a Frankenstein monster. So now he's called Frankencastle. He was chopped to bits by Wolverine's illegitimate son, Daken.
I was thinking, this isn't Wolverine. Like, I'm flicking through it, and it's a dude with claws, but he looks nothing like him.
Yes, he's got claws in different places, two at the top and one at the bottom. So, and now this is Frankencastle versus Daken.
I like the art.
It is very violent, but it is good. I mean, when I first heard about the concept, I was like, what, they're going to kill the Punisher? It's like the most realistic, I use the term loosely, hero in the Marvel Universe, and now they're turning into some kind of, Hammer film horror creature. Mm. But it actually works. It's kind of fun, and, Remender's been doing a good job. He's a good writer, kind of exploring the humanity, and lots of blood and guts, as any good Punisher series should have.
It looks very 2000 AD.
Yeah, I suppose that's...
like a bit Judge Dreddy, actually.
Yeah, that could be true.
Like the style of art and...
Yeah.
It's very... Yeah, I like the look of this one, actually.
Well, I might have to give you some past issues you can catch up.
Yeah.
So that's what I have been reading, and that is what we've been reading.
This next segment we're tentatively calling, what, Trade Swap?
Absolutely.
Because but those two words mean the same thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. But while I just the first, because you said you watched Wife Swap.
Yes, Wife Swap night. USA, oh, which boy. Is the best show on television.
But you did also watch...
Next to Breaking Bad or whatever. What I said I watched?
Predator 2.
Predator 2, which is...
Glover.
Gary Busey, baby. That's what it's all about.
And that was the first film that kicked off the Aliens vs. Predator whole phenomenon.
Yes, because the alien head appears briefly in the Predator ship.
Yes.
It looks like a giant dong, basically. Well, that's intentional. H.R. Geiger has a...
Yes.
He has a, choice.
Fixation.
Fixation, I would say, yeah.
But the Aliens vs. Predator comics did appear in Dark Horse. Back in the late 80s, I believe.
Are they
first? Nor have I.
Oh. Probably not.
I cannot say. But talking about things versus things and things teaming up.
Oh, yeah, back to the topic or whatever.
So we are talking about Superman Batman. Superman Batman Public Enemies is a animated film. The last 3-4 years, DC, which sort of owned by Warner Brothers, you could say. They brought them out in the 70s. Well, kind of owned, but kind of not really. They've been making some awesome animated films in the last few years. So even though DC may not make some great live-action films, and Marvel are getting the leg up on that, DC are kicking Marvel's butts when it comes to cartoon features, because the Marvel ones haven't been that great.
They always kind of have. I mean, DC's always been doing these kind of features kind of regularly, haven't they?
But this is the first time where the kind of... The branding, is the same, where they're based on comics that from the publisher's past.
Yeah, have any of them been based on comics at all?
I mean, the last one I could think of was Batman Return and the Batwoman and...
Was that based on a comic book?
No. So this is the first.
Was she a lesbian in that one?
No. And there was a Batman versus Dracula, which was based on the the Batman series.
Is that the Kelly Jones one?
No, this is the Kitty one.
He's a vampire in that, though, isn't he?
Who, Kelly Jones? I can neither confirm or deny.
That's why he draws them so well.
Superman Batman Public Enemies is a... animated film based on the first 6 issues of the Superman Batman comic series that launched by writer Jeff Loeb, who we mentioned before, and artist Ed McGuinness. It launched in 2003, and it follows the plot fairly closely. It's an awesome comic series, and it's pretty much the only series that I have been following on a regular basis. And one of the things that Loeb does so well is he highlights the differences between the two lead characters.
In the novel he does.
That is true, not so much in the film.
I would say.
And I was going to mention that, but you're absolutely right.
In the novel, he has this... Loeb seems to love voiceover narration.
Yes.
I'd say in the novel it works.
Yes.
Because first they have these concurrent, inner monologues.
Yes.
That they both appear, in each panel, basically. Or, they alternate.
Yes.
So you sort of see how they both take on, look at a situation in their opposite ways, you know, because of their upbringing and all that. Yep. And I like the start of this, where it shows them that both their traumatic childhood moments, yes, or Superman's little pudgy baby.
Their origins,
but they try and draw the parallels, but the difference is, it's interesting.
It is good.
And that's not in the film.
It isn't in the film, you're right. And I think a lot of people that don't read the comics would think Superman and Batman are best buddies, but it was kind of Frank Miller and Dark Knight Returns to kind of question that. You know, yes. Superman's more the, I'll follow the government, I love humanity, I believe in the best in people.
Well, Superman's like, I love my country, I love, yeah, you know, was it truth something in the American way?
One of those truth, justice in the American way.
Whereas, and all that stuff. Yes. Right? That's from that last movie. Yes. I remember that.
Whereas Batman is obviously, he always doubts people. He doesn't believe in the best necessarily. He's a self-made man. He's not married. Like I said, Superman's married to Lois Lane, so he's got that link to humanity. Batman is always, you know, hiding in the shadows. And
it works on a visual level. Obviously, you have, yes, a costume. So.
That's true, but they both want to achieve the same things, and they're both born out of tragedies. Batman lost his parents, Superman didn't even really know his parents, but lost his planet.
So I think that seems far worse.
Yeah, they're both orphans, orphans. at a big scale, I guess.
Yeah.
So as you said, yeah, the frequent internal monologues, Jeff Loeb was kind of, as far as I can tell, the first writer to kind of use that on a regular basis in the Superman-Batman series, and no writer since. I mean, Loeb hasn't been on the comic series for a while, so no writer's taken that up.
It takes a lot of guts, I think, to go, I know what these guys would be thinking.
Yes.
But writer could do that, but the audience might go, you're full of it. Yeah. You don't know them as well as I do.
And it is a lot of writing, but the action is so intense that it doesn't slow things down.
I would say he's quite wordy, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So the film, so basically, and Ed McGuinness is the artist, and he does big bulky people, and Loeb and McGuinness helped
a lot of big bulky people,
which works well for this, and also for Marvel's Hulk. They just relaunched Hulk, a couple of years ago, with the new Red Hulk. So
can you explain to me why Superman is big and bulky?
I have this conversation with my brother because it comes from resistance.
Yes, muscle resistance.
Yes, and Superman has no resistance because there's nothing really strong enough to give him that. I don't know. He's Kryptonian. He wears his...
You could say, he's an alien, just shut up. And, you know, that's the response you should have given me.
I could, but I'm far too polite. So what happens in the film is the same, pretty much, what happens in the comics. The animated film is set 3 years after Lex Luthor becomes president of America.
Can I come in there? Can you explain to me, why did everyone vote for him?
Well, the film sort of explains that there's the global financial crisis, the world's in a lot of pain.
But they know he's an ex-con. They know that he's probably done some wacky shit with, like, laser beams and...
death rays. But he's Teflon. Yeah. Nothing sticks to him, man. He's got money, he helps people, and he's always the public face of helping Metropolis. And even Gotham, he helped rebuild Gotham after the earthquake. Explains it very briefly, but it was one of the best ideas that DC Comics had, making him president. They just didn't do enough with it.
I'd say his motivation makes no sense to me. Okay, now hear me out. I don't know what his goal is. Is he after power? If he's after power, he's become president. Why is he still like, aha, now that I've become president, I can stick it to Superman because he keeps blocking my plans? No, you've achieved your plans. You've become freaking president of the US.
He's greedy. Lex Luthor's greedy, and he's insecure, and he knows that as long as Superman and other...
Bald men, right?
I'm getting there myself. Lex believes that humanity is the best, and humanity should rule Earth, not superpowered people. And the more that we rely on superpowered people, the worse humanity becomes. It's kind of a theme throughout the whole Lex-Superman relationship, and...
Okay, yeah, I can see what you mean, because he tries to make them into these outlaws, basically.
And he hates the public trusting the superheroes rather than humanity.
But he's a bit clumsy about it here. He's not very elegant in his scheme.
Well, he had a lot...
Because he tried a similar thing in Lex Luthor Man of Steel by, Brian Azzarello and...
Libermijo,
which I really like. Yes. And that's a similar thing again, and that's also got his internal monologue saying, you know, what he's about. And I got that there, right? But his scheme was basically the same. He wanted to discredit Superman by pointing out to everyone that his moral code has no place in the world. It was something like that, right? He manufactured this situation where Superman had to kill this other superhero who everyone loved. Was that it?
Here's the plot in a nutshell. This is me in a nutshell. So Lex Luthor becomes president. He discovers it's a kryptonite meteorite hurtling towards Earth. He frames Superman for the murder of bad guy, not good guy, but bad guy, Metallo.
No, no, I was talking about Lex Luthor, Man of Steel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I haven't read that for a while, so I'm not
familiar.
Oh,
okay, okay. Okay, similar, but go on.
Yeah. Similar, yeah. He then frames Superman for the murder of Metallo.
Makes it look like a murder and tries to get people to turn against him, basically.
Yes, which you didn't think people would turn against Superman that easily, but anyway.
They're very fickle, the American people.
They
Lex Luthor for president. Superman Schmooperman.
So he then frames Superman, and basically Lex sells this idea that the closer this huge kryptonite meteorite hurtles towards Earth, the closer it gets to Earth, the crazier Superman gets. Look, he killed this bad guy.
Well, so not crazy.
Yeah, so he can't be trusted anymore, so he puts a $1 billion bounty on Superman and Batman's head, because he's helping him out, which then brings out a cavalcade of bad guys, and this is one of the high points for a DC fan like me. There's four ice-themed bad guys.
I thought that was funny, yeah.
Beating up Batman. Four. How awesome is that? Then there's cameos by Black Manta, King Shark, Giganta, Gorilla Grodd, Silver Banshee, Mongul, good guys like Black Lightning, and Power Girl, who's voiced by Smallville's Allison Mack. There's no origins offered. There's just all these people in fancy costumes show up. So for some people like Milan, be like, who is that? Who is that?
But that was basically like... it didn't really matter, because in the comic, when they all come, it basically happens in two or three pages, right?
Yes.
So it's just them fighting a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I don't really need to know who these guys are.
Yeah.
In the cartoon, that central fight scene, which is maybe a couple of pages long in the comic.
Yeah.
But seems big because it's on splash pages and all that stuff.
Yeah.
In the film, it's about 20 minutes long.
It's just quite long.
So it's 20 minutes of them fighting these guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, get back to the story. Get back to the
story. I love superheroes fighting each other.
And
fighting supervillains.
Punching.
Some stuff hasn't been brought from the comic to the film. I know from memory that there was the Kingdom Come Superman shows up in the comic. The Kingdom Come is a miniseries done in the mid-90s, which is a future set version of the DC Universe. Superman's retired. The world's a horrible place. That future version of Superman shows up in the book. He doesn't show up in the film.
Is that Superman?
Yeah, with the grey hair and the black hair.
I didn't know that was... I thought what that Superman was... The world was destroyed by the meteor because... What was it? So Batman was going to pilot it, or Superman was going to pilot the plane, right? But then the Atom dude realized, oh no, I have to absorb the radiation or the Earth will be destroyed. So he kind of punches out Superman or whatever. What happens in the future Superman's world is the world is destroyed and he's the only one left because he's super, right?
Okay.
So he's like, oh, what did I do? I have to go back and kill both of you for some reason, right?
Okay.
I don't know what he was planning.
He doesn't want to be lonely.
Yeah.
So some stuff like that has been left out. Superboy and A Supergirl, there's been many. A Supergirl show up in the comic.
Yeah, there's a scene where like all the kids basically...
Yeah.
The kids are all right. They turn up.
They don't like to be called kids, Maladdin.
The Bat Kids.
The Proteges, the Psychics.
The dog's in it, Superman's dog, but Crypto. Batman's dog isn't.
Ace the Bat Hound.
Ace the Bat Hound and Crypto have...
I will be talking about Ace the Bat Hound very shortly.
I'm so happy.
And there's also a bit in the comic where Metallo, who's the bad guy with a kryptonite heart.
The Terminator guy.
Who was played by Megan Fox's husband in Smallville, is the suspected killer of Bruce Wayne's parents, but that doesn't show up in the cartoon film. But the film is only just over an hour long.
But so you know he's not going to be.
No, I know.
It's like, as soon as you read it like that, no one's going to believe that.
No, but...
That's outrageous. Back to the kryptonite meteor, which is far more plausible.
But Marvel and DC do have a history of retconning, so you never know. Mm. The good stuff from the comic has been kept in, including lots of dialogue and the set pieces, the kryptonite bullet, Luthor injecting himself with literal kryptonite, with ripping his shirt off and all manly and bulging muscles.
Yeah, his plan at the end just comes to punching. Like, he has his big scheme, and it's like, okay, cool. And then at the end, he's like, forget the scheme. Punching. He doesn't talk anything.
He doesn't talk like a carnival sideshow host, but yes. There's also the clash with Captain Marvel and Hawkman versus Superman and Batman. And there's also the part with Hiro, who's the new Japanese toy man, and his big freaking giant robot, which I loved. There's also hints in the film.
Yeah, the robot was pretty funny, actually.
There's also hints in the film which about Superman's death and his romance with Lois. But again, those are kind of
I thought in the film, like, Lois doesn't appear at all. And then right at the end, it's like this chick in a helicopter, right? Or whatever,
yes.
She's approaching. Now, as someone who maybe doesn't know who these characters are, say a child picked this up, right? And they were, this is their first time seeing Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
They know of the characters, obviously. They're like, who's that girl?
Yeah, right? That's fair enough.
Right?
Why is she kissing Superman? They kiss, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do.
They hug at least.
Obviously, you can't put everything in a film. Maybe I'm nitpicking.
And to be honest, these films are made for people like me rather than Aladdin.
I would say so.
But the two-disc version on DVD and Blu-ray comes with a bunch of stuff. The disc one has a look at The Blackest Night, which I mentioned before, and a few other trailers, and looks at the other... Mm-hmm. DC animated films. Disc 2, I thought, I don't know if you watched this, but there's a Dinner with DCU feature.
I did not watch that.
In which casting director Adrian Romano, Batman voice actor Kevin Conroy, Bruce Timm, and Gregory Novak, who's just...
Have dinner
and talk. And Gregory Novak, by the way...
What are they eating?
...has just left DC, but anyway. And they're just drinking coffee and talking about how awesome...
Coffee's not dinner.
...the DC... I have coffee with dinner.
So, really?
Sure. Not every day, but, you know.
That doesn't seem right.
When I'm sitting in the dark reading Superman comics. There's my Lois. And there's also a couple of Paul Dini and Bruce Timm cartoon episodes included on the disc.
I saw that, yeah. And they weren't the Batman. There was one which was from the other show.
Justice League?
Yes, that's the one.
And Ra's al Ghul and Penguin and Riddler. Anyway, this film isn't necessarily for kids. There's a bit of blood and violence, and I think there's a harsh word where Lex calls...
A poop? There's a poo-poo word in this film?
No, but something similar. But I'm a delicate man. I love this film. It's so successful. It sold 500,000 DVDs and made $6 million, more than any comic these days. And it's the first DC animated film to get a sequel, which is Superman Batman Apocalypse, based on Jeff Loeb and Michael Turner's introduction of the new Supergirl into the comics. And it also has Tim Daly, Kevin Conroy, and Clancy Brown coming back again as Superman, Batman, Lex Luthor. That film, called Apocalypse, is an animated film. Comes on September 28 in Region 1, in November sometime for Region 4. You can see the trailer and the scene online. Lastly, for Superman, Batman, August 25th is the 75th issue of the Superman, Batman, which is a 56-page anniversary special.
How much have we talked about Superman and Batman today?
Not enough. Adam Hughes writes and draws a Supergirl Batgirl story. Joe Kelly does stuff, talking about the past, present, and future of Superman Batman. There's Red Robin, a Superboy. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So that's the 75th anniversary issue of Superman Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So pick up that DVD. Wait for the sequel.
Chris lent me this.
Uh-oh.
Okay. I just have a few issues.
Questions
and maybe some issues you might be able to clear up with me. Chris lent me these, right? And he said, okay, check them out. Tell me what you think. It wasn't like a, you'll love this thing. It was like, you know, tell me what you think. I think it's interesting that you sort of loved it so much.
Yes.
Because as someone who's coming from a point of view where, okay, I kind of dig Batman, right? I've never really liked Superman. And I think that's common for a lot of non-superhero readers.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Right. I thought, okay, in the book... Yeah, as you said, I got their characters, and I was like, okay, I know what they're about, all right?
Yep.
In the film, there was an assumption that you knew what they... Of course you know what they represent, but I didn't get the relationship or why I should care if they're buddies, or why do they care about each other so much more than any other... Because there's all these other characters, like Boob Window Girl.
Power Girl.
Very powerful. Although she didn't do anything powerful in the thing.
Well, she was a good girl that kind of...
She was a good girl who just had this kind of, like, very apprehensive look on her face for the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which meant, because she's a girl, she can't do any fighting. They filled it up with a lot of characters who I was like, who's that guy?
Yeah.
And I couldn't get why is it... Okay, you know all the characters who join up with Lex Luthor and work for him, right?
Yes.
There's the Adam guy. There's the dude who's all in red.
Captain Adam.
Who are basically
Major
the same
Force.
Dude, but in different outfits.
Yeah, fair enough.
Judging by the character models in this.
Yes.
Are they bad guys normally?
Captain Adam is like a guy that works for the Air Force, so he's...
So he's a government employee.
He's basically operating for the government.
Alright, okay.
The other bad guys, like the cold fiend bad guys and all the...
No, the good
they're
guys.
The bounty.
Well, the guys who are good but on the other side, who are working for... Why are they working for Lex Luthor? Have they met Superman before? Do they know that Superman is this dude is no good, man?
They know those Black Lightning, Power Girl, Major Force and Captain Adam and
they
the Katana is the other one. Oh, yeah.
They don't have names in the cartoon, I don't think.
No.
They probably just scream, like, Kajah! I'm like, who?
Oh, they work for Lex Luthor because, well, they want to obey the government, and Superman and Batman don't because they don't like Lex Luthor. That's why they're rebels. That's why Lex wants the public against them, and that's why there's a $1 billion bounty on their head. So it's kind of understandable, but...
Yeah, I just don't get why everyone else just takes this bald guy, for Lex Luthor, for his word, just saying, no, I'm good now.
They do turn against... Superman and Batman
rather
quickly.
They turn against the two biggest heroes and the heads of what? Justice something?
Justice League.
Justice League. They know they're the main guys of that, so like the two best superheroes in the world or whatever. Right?
Yep.
And they just go, nah, they're wrong. Let's trust this guy who once tried to destroy the world of a giant spider. He probably does something. Like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, there are the comic. It looks great, and it probably offers up a bit more explanation.
The comic, I thought, explained it a lot more.
Yeah.
It was maybe a bit more convoluted for that reason.
Yeah.
But the cartoon has so much action in it that I thought, okay, just give me a minute of them talking to each other so I can understand. I understood. I just couldn't get into it. So, I mean, I'm sort of saying, like, oh, I didn't get this. I did, maybe, because I probably know more about these characters than I let on. But I'm just saying, from a point of view of someone who doesn't
An
investment in the comic,
right,
that would be my comment,
I think these DC animated films are an excellent entryway, so people like you or that aren't that familiar with superheroes can go, these aren't bad, I want to know more about these characters. Off to the comic shop I go!
How did you think they compared to the other DC animated films?
I think it's one of the best.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Green Lantern.
It's no Mask of the Phantasm, my friend.
Yeah,
it's I don't think it's on par with Return of the Joker, to be honest.
Well,
which
I suppose those,
Beyond one, which
those two
great.
Films were going off previously established animated series, so probably had less explaining to do and made more sense.
But Mask of the Phantasm even retells the freaking Batman origin because they didn't count on everyone knowing it.
Okay.
That one actually goes into heaps of detail about his psychology and all that, you know, all the fun stuff for me, maybe. I don't know.
Well, the new DC animated film out is called Batman Under the Red Hood. We'll talk about that when I get my copy.
Let's, because that's we're talking about convoluted comic books.
Yeah.
I did read, I have read what the one where Joker kills Jason.
Yes.
What's it called?
Lonely Place of Dying?
No, that's not it. That's the one where he doesn't have a Robin and Tim Drake.
Death in the Family.
Death in the Family.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, I have an old copy of that. And that I enjoyed, so I'm interested to see if there's flashbacks to that in this new cartoon.
Just very quickly, there's been a host of Robins. The second Robin died, so that's what this animated film talks about, him coming back to life. So yeah,
we'll talk about it next week anyway.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think of the animation in this?
I liked it. They tried to match Ed McGuinness's art style in the comic to some degree, in that they're big, bulky, and even the women, big, bulky women. But I liked it. It's quite fluid.
Yeah. I did think it was quite fluid, actually.
Yeah.
Some of the character models I'm not keen on.
Yeah.
I thought it was... There's some really good scenes where they're kind of off-model a bit.
Yep.
That's an animation term, by the way.
Okay.
When they're off the character model, the animators have to keep to.
Yep.
Usually in the fighting scenes. And there was one scene where one of them's flying in the air or whatever, and there's a girl screaming in his face, and she has like some sort of hypersonic...
Silver Banshee.
Okay. Yep. And his face does like this wobbly thing, because she's blowing, screaming at it. And I thought, like, that's a nice little piece of animation there.
Okay.
Like, when he's off model, obviously, because his face has all these contours and it's going a bit weird. So it's okay animated, but
okay.
Yeah. Well, we've talked enough about.
Have we, Maladdin? Let's talk about something entirely different.
Oh, let's do that.
Pooed.
Okay. Shall we talk about broader? Yeah, we'll talk broader about these kind of new newspaper comics that have been coming out.
Yeah.
Honestly, I've not read a lot of them. Chris lent me Wednesday Comics issue 8, I believe, and Pooed number 4.
Number 1. I think it was $4, but it's number 1.
It is not, fine. Oh, so that symbol means dollar, and that symbol is... Okay, fine. Pooed...
Welcome to the English language,
Pooed,
my friend.
Pooed $4 was interesting. Now, that one's kind of an independent one, so I don't think I knew any of the artists in here, actually. Did you?
A couple.
Yeah, I'm not too down on this particular scene of the... I like independent comics, not so much the autobiographical ones, and a lot of them tend to be these guys. I thought this was pretty neat. There's a good one by Kevin Much, which I really liked, and Connor Williamson, who did this kind of Dust Bowl era United States, you know, the Midwest kind of thing.
Yep.
And I thought they got like the idea of what to do with a Sunday-sized comic there, compressing a... Kind of a story that you could read on its own, but you could pick it up and keep going. Maybe not that last one, but say the Kevin Much one. I think that's the first one where the kids start like a babysitting
group. Oh, yes. I did like that one. Baby Slithers, it's called. Babysitting with a Snake.
Yeah, but this one, Pooed, was definitely more one-offs and stuff. So I think if you kind of like Wednesday comics, and you'd like to try out some indie comics, what's the price on?
$4.
$4. American.
$4. Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha. In the West Australia, that means double the price.
But it is about four times the size of a normal comic. It's printed on cheaper, as you say, newspaper-type paper. So
it's much bigger than Wednesday Comics, actually.
It is. Wednesday Comics was a series created by DC last year.
Ah, yes.
That was, I think, 16 issues. And it's the same...
Just been collected, I believe.
Yeah, same tabloid format. All superhero anthologies. Each page is a different superhero
This was interesting story. For me because, obviously, there's a lot of heroes.
Different creative teams.
Different creative teams, some of which I really liked, some of which I didn't. I mean, it's a quick read.
It is.
To be honest. It's probably too quick.
Yeah.
I'd say compared to... Because I've just been reading Prince Valiant, and that's a Sunday comic done really well.
Yes.
In that I could just pick out a page and read it. And get so much story.
Okay.
Wednesday comics, not all of them. Like some of them do roll along really well. I mean, there's less story, basically.
Yes.
I mean, that's the there's a problem with these guys are used to writing these. How many pages in all comic?
22 story pages.
Thank you. 22, and then ads which don't count.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which take up another 20 pages, probably. But they're used to writing to that format. So a page in a normal comic has a certain amount of story. It might be a scene. And they're still doing that here on the Wednesday comics, right?
Okay.
Not all of them, as I said.
Yep.
Some of them, they're writing a scene per page, which means because I'm reading issue 8, which is, I'm actually kind of glad, I wanted to start from the middle.
Yep.
Because that's your experience reading a Sunday page comic.
Yeah.
And some of them are like, what the hell is going on? And they don't bother explaining. A couple of them try to... Just like a paragraph at the top saying, Superman has just beaten this, you know, now he's doing this. Like, that's what I need, thank you.
Okay.
They don't do that.
Yeah.
A couple of them do, and a couple of them work for that reason. I liked Neil Gaiman and Mike Allred?
Yes.
Yeah, they did a Metamorpho.
Yep.
And he's going through the periodic table kind of thing.
Okay.
And they're just having fun with the format, so he's transforming into cadmium and all the, all the good elements, right?
Yay for cadmium!
I liked Paul Pope's Strange Adventures. I'm trying to remember which
one. Oh, yes, Adam Strange. Guy with the jetpack, kind of an ode to Flash Gordon, kind of Buck Rogers type character.
I mean, I dug that, and I obviously like his style anyway.
Yeah.
But I thought his I could pick up and go, oh, I know what's going on. Because I think he gives you a hint at the beginning, and a character says something that tells you what the hell's going on.
Yep.
Whereas, like, the ones which are, some of them are drawn really nice, like the Bermejo Superman one.
Yes.
And the Rizzo Batman.
Batman, yep.
They're drawn really nice, but I could tell what was going on, but
yeah.
I guess it was like reading a page out of a normal comic rather than... But I guess this will come with time, because I don't want to totally badmouth this, because I think there's a lot of promise in this.
Well, the trade is out now, and I think the trade has a Plastic Man story and a couple other extras. Mm. So it's probably... I mean, I haven't read every issue, I must say. Mm. But it was an interesting... Mm. Idea, an interesting experiment.
Some of them really get the format, though. I thought the Cubitt Brothers...
Okay.
Theirs was like, could have been out of like an old, it just read like, this is, they know this, they've read these kind of large format, one page things before. It's like Sergeant Rock, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's the Cubitt brothers. I think you might find it's the dad, Joe Cubitt.
Oh, they're dad and son.
Adam and Andy are the brothers, Joe Cubitt's their
dad. Oh, okay.
And Joe Cubitt kind of made his career with Hawkman and Sergeant Rock.
Speaking of Hawkman, I dug Carl Baker's Hawkman. It's pretty whacked out, and I could... He tells you what's happening at the beginning.
Okay.
I'm like, so there's a lot of promise in here, and I liked that it was a character I really don't know anything about Hawkman. I know he's got like a nose thing, and he has wings on his head, and a mace.
That's all you need to know. That's what his business card says. Nose, wings, mace. Hawkman.
Okay. So it's finished, so they're not doing any more of
it? It's finished. All 16 or whatever issues are out now in the collection, which is huge.
Are they going to do more?
It hasn't been announced as yet.
I guess they'll look at the numbers and work out whether they go. They'll do an all Batman Wednesday comic, probably. Because I know that sells.
How did you compare to... I mean, I guess Pood is a bigger comic, but it's more of an independent anthology, whereas Wednesday Comics is a DC superhero anthology comic.
I thought the one-off stories in Pood really worked to their advantage, basically, because they didn't have to explain a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Wednesday comics clearly have the problem of these are established characters for... But I did think, you know, it's fairly approachable. Not all the stories. No. Some of them are really good, and yep. some of them, okay, and some are unreadable. Like, I could not even follow the panel layout in Wonder Woman.
Oh,
I noticed
okay.
that was a problem in both of these, actually. They okay. were both going, these pages are so big, let's do wacky page layouts.
Yeah.
To the problem where it's your eye's not sure where to go.
Yes.
Like, I noticed in one of them, they basically had subdivided the bottom half of the page, so it was like two small comic pages.
Pooed, yes.
So you read left to right and you duck down to the next row,
yep.
like, but in a column. It's hard to explain. But they're almost trying to be too clever.
Yeah.
But that's going to be with practice, you know.
Yes.
This is a format that no one's written in for...
A while.
A long while. Except for those guys who made those Phantom comics, you know, in the Sunday paper.
Oh, okay, yes.
And it's not like... It's not as... I don't want to say that it's horrible. It's not like reading Modesty Blaze in the newspaper where it's three panels and you're just like, this is a waste of my freaking time. Modesty Blaze is just talking yeah. to some dude. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
There is a story. It's interesting. I think the art's really good. So... Wednesday Comics well worth picking out. Pooed is fun, especially if you like your indie stuff, and I think the price is totally right for this. Sort
yeah.
of thing. Yeah.
I did like Pooed. My three faves were Baby Slithers by Sarah Edward Corbett. Mm. Talking about two kids who want to buy new Converse shoes, so they try babysitting using a snake. Tenderfoot by Lance Hansen, which is aptly subtitled A Funny Story About My Dad. And US oh, Ape yeah. by Jim Rugg. And Brian Marika tells of the titular Rambo-like ape who has to rescue a marine monkey from Al-Qaeda. With Pooed, you can see more previews and stuff at poodcomics.blogspot.com, which is their website.
Who published this?
Big If Comics.
Big
I think they're a new publisher on the scene. Like you say, not every... I don't think... Pooed is big pages, and I don't think every story demands...
There's a couple which really pages. Don't demand... There's like this back page is fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I do like that.
Rami and...
Soupy or something?
It looks like the top of the page Dreams is kind of the print's kind of worn off or something.
Joe Infernari.
And like he's totally using the big format.
Yes.
He's got like a colour section at the bottom which stands out on this big black and white thing. There's a lot of story.
Yep.
Yeah.
They are Pooed is very experimental, so
for sure.
And Pooed number 2 is in the September previews catalogue. So that comes out in November.
Do you recommend it?
I would, if you don't like superheroes and if you're interested in comics as an experimental art form, get Pooed.
Yeah, I'd say it's worth checking out. I thought Wednesday Comics was pretty decent. I do think they're writing to the smaller page, though.
So yes.
I hope they make more Wednesday Comics. I think with practice, this could be freaking amazing.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that wraps up. Actually, I was going to briefly mention that Top Cow has released three trade paperbacks or trades or TPBs. Big books of previously published miniseries. So out this week is a book written by Rick Lovett with art by Jeremy Horn called Berserker, and I liked it. I watched The Crazies last night, which is a horror film with small town. It's a remake of a 70s film. A bunch of people in small town America go crazy. Chemical biological experiment.
Gotcha.
Kind of like this book called Berserker, which is, I think, collects the first six issues of the miniseries. It's there's two guys called Aaron and Farris. They're two men who basically just ran ripping people's heads off and intestines out. It's very bloody. And there's an interesting origin story about Viking warriors and military and all this kind of stuff. I'm quoted on the back cover. Yay! Not my name exactly, but it's as I said, it's bloody. It's not for the kiddies. It's pretty in your face. And it's also... comes from Milo Ventimiglia, who played Rocky's son in Rocky Balboa and was the handsome guy in Heroes.
I didn't watch Rocky Balboa.
I loved it.
I recently saw Rocky for the first time. Really
okay.
good.
It is a good film. Yeah. I like Stallone. I'm going to see him in The Expendables.
If your only memory of Rocky, the Rocky movies, is him fighting Mr. T or Dolph Lundgren. It's Dolph Lundgren. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And you're thinking, oh, it's just these corny, crappy movies with, like, I will gosh you, you know, whatever yeah. crap. It's not like that at all. It's really amazing. Like,
the first one is more of a drama, and I think
yeah,
didn't
it's a really
win the
drama. He
Academy Award for Best Screenplay or Best
I
Picture
so.
Or something.
And he wrote the screenplay,
yeah,
so it's Stallone. And it is the drama. There's barely any fighting.
Yeah.
Maybe at the very beginning, at the very end. It's more about what this guy's about, why he's doing it, and the kind of personal inner struggles he has. And it's
yes.
really good, and his relationship. So, yeah, check it out. That's not comic-related at all.
Well... Berserker is out. Also from publisher Top Cow is Cyberforce Hunter Killer, written by Mark Wade and with art by Kenneth Rocafort. Looks great. It's basically two high-tech superhero teams fighting each other, teaming up. Blah, blah, blah. Impaler Volume 2, which I loved. I haven't read Volume 2.
Yeah,
Volume 1
yeah.
I liked, written by William Harms, art by Mark Timpson. It's basically vampires invade the US. The end of Volume 1, they drop a nuke on New York City, but it wasn't enough. Vlad the Impaler comes back from the dead, and he returns to help this cop who's dying to fight back the vampire. It's an awesome series. I really liked it. So
vampires are definitely the in thing now, aren't they?
They are. Vampires and
zombies.
Zombies
on the way out, do you
Ooh,
think?
Don't tell zombies that. The union will be onto you.
We should talk about zombies sometime.
Zombie-themed.
I hate zombies.
A lot can be done with them.
It could be, but it's not. I hear The Walking Dead's like good, and it's like the only good one.
Yeah, so I haven't read much of that, but yeah, Walking Dead.
TV show of that.
Yes, so you're right.
Being made by...
AMC, is it? No?
It might be AMC.
HBO?
There's quite a famous director behind it.
Yes, there is, and he did the pilot. But I don't think he's doing the series, and his name escapes me. Robert Zemeckis?
Just look it up yourself, people. We can't tell you everything.
One thing we'd do before we go, we thought we'd do the website of the week. Project Rooftop is this week's website, which is at, you can find antennacenticker.com/Project Rooftop, or just Google Project Rooftop. If you like different superhero costume redesigns or different art, like the kind of we talked about in Poon and Wednesday Comics today, Project Rooftop is the website for you. They do different comics, so they'll say redesign Superman's costume.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Black Canary's or Iron Man's costume. And
people aren't sticking to the same theme. I've noticed like some of them will... Obviously, you have the same guys who keep drawing steampunk Superman. Say what you will about steampunk. It's all right, I guess. But, but, like, some of them are really creative. And
yes.
There's obviously the guys who go, let's make it create, like, human and real.
You know?
And that's interesting, but I like the ones where they go, how am I going to make the iconography of this character work?
Yeah.
Like someone whose outfit just doesn't do anything for them, basically.
Yes, true. And it's founded by a bunch of comic professionals, and they always give explanations as to why they chose this person and the runner-up and stuff. It's good. So if you like behind-the-scenes arty kind of stuff, Project Rooftop, that's the place to go.
Speaking of costume redesigning, I'll just slip this in. What do you think of the new Wonder Woman costume?
New Wonder Woman costume, J. Michael Straczynski and Don Kramer are taking over or have just taken over.
Is that a Jim Lee redesign?
I believe it was, yes. Jim Lee's been working on DC Comics for the last few years.
People know who Jim Lee is, I think.
Yeah. J. Michael Straczynski, yeah, I don't know.
The costume itself, though.
The leather jacket and stuff, I'm not a big fan. They're trying to make it more practical, so she's not running around in her star-spangled underwear.
Yeah, I never... Like, her outfit, I thought, was very iconic.
Yeah.
So changing that is going to be a huge risk, because basically there's very little about her character itself, which is very... most of the mainstream don't really know anything about Wonder Woman besides that she's this chick who wears, like, she has a lasso and she has a tiara.
Yes.
And, like this W on her chest. Like,
yes.
You know those things about her, and you know she's, like, one of the big chick superheroes, but you know nothing else about her.
No, and that is a problem with her character. I think I did like her costume in Kingdom Come, the future set DC series. It's like a golden armour, because she's a warrior. She's, the ultimate warrior princess, plus she's also a member of royalty and an ambassador. I don't like her new costume. It looks a bit too much streetwear and casual, not too much like a superhero.
She's got this Animal Man jacket.
She's got a black leather jacket.
Yeah.
Trousers, she doesn't have the tiara, I don't think. Yeah, kind of tight black trousers and no
The costume, when I saw it, I was like, it's a bit weird. I've seen other artists draw that costume now, like being inspired by it.
Yep.
In motion, it's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because the jacket flares around and stuff.
Okay.
But, again, it's not going to make her character more interesting.
No, and I think what JMS, the writer, is doing with her is she's like losing her memories or something. And, she's going back to street level stuff. So I don't agree with the direction that he's taking her. So perhaps the costume will probably work for that direction, more realistic, less...
Yeah, I think if you lost your memory and you're like, why am I wearing this again?
we'll see. Fanboys like me are very finicky.
It's very
finicky.
Black. It's very dark.
It is very black.
Because before she was basically white, gold, and
red
and a bit of blue.
Yeah.
Right? That's right?
Yep.
And then obviously the gold lasso, which is probably the costume accessory.
Yes.
Anyone would
I'd like
better
one.
With. Yeah.
I don't need a tiara, but a gold lasso that makes people tell the truth. That would be handy.
Yeah.
Nothing
to say about that. Still don't get it.
So, what are we going to talk about next week?
Okay, I think, comic book, what were we saying? Vanity projects.
Yes.
Comic books and vanity projects go together like...
Butter and Vegemite on toast.
I hate those together.
Butter and Vegemite? You don't like Vegemite?
I hate Vegemite.
So you just put Vegemite on toast without butter?
No, you fool. Just butter on toast without Vegemite.
So you don't have Vegemite at all?
Never.
Wow.
I think once I thought it was Nutella and I had it a bit on a spoon. And I'm it's just that black... This is another regional Australian thing that no one else is going to get.
Some painful childhood memories.
This is not a specific Perth reference.
We discussed this before. What is a vanity project, Maladdin?
Yes. I wasn't quite clear on the term when we started. I was sort of like, is it just a creator design project which is really their personal baby? But I couldn't really distinguish between that and what makes it crappy. I think the thing that makes a vanity project is that they think it's awesome while everyone else around them is telling them, oh, that's a bad idea, Russell.
Yes.
Or that's a bad idea, Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
Or, you know, anyone else says he's horrible, or John Travolta. And Frank Miller is guilty of vanity projects.
Yep.
And we might argue next week that Alan Moore is guilty of the odd vanity project.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot, but the occasional one, which we'll be ripping into them for basically giving us garbage and telling us we should like it because of who they are.
Yeah, and I'll be talking about Mark Miller and Neil Adams and their both recent work. I think because creators get to a certain point in their career where the publishers, whether DC or Marvel or someone else, knows that regardless of what the pages have, if their name is on it, it's going to work.
Yep.
That's not enough to sell a good comic.
It's not enough to make... Well, it's enough to sell a comic, not sell a good comic.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they do sell...
That's true. That's the problem.
Or at least the first couple of vanity projects.
Yeah.
After that, I'm sure the sales slump when people realise what they're getting.
Yes.
Yes.
We'll also be talking, if we have time, about the Eisner Award winners, which is kind of the Academy Awards of the comic book.
And then if we have time, I'm going to force Chris to read some Asterix comics.
Yes. Which we should be talking about next week as well. So thank you for joining us. I guess that's all we have to say.
I think you believe so. You can check out more of Chris's work.
Oh, yes. This is on extrascheduled.com. My blog is comicbookjesus.com and Maladdin's is...
Yeah, you can check me out at www.purgeaudit.com. That's the music you've heard for the show has been from there, and that's got links to my blog and stuff.
I think it's
there.
Actually purgeaudit.blogspot.com, isn't it?
The blogspot is, but I have a domain name. Purgeaudit.com.
Nice.
Check it out.
Nice work.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us on our inaugural episode of Extra Sequential.
Tune in next week, I suppose.
Absolutely. Bye for now.
Catch you. Superman's the one with the ears, right?
They both have ears.
Batman has four ears. Oh my god!
That's true. Superman has the required number of ears.